Welcome to La Liga Weekly Goals and Drama this weekend as Real Sociedad lead the way after the traitor Mikel Merino scored against Osasuna. Sevilla win the derby. Hector Bellerin was so determined to score, he didn't care at which end. This club is my life, declares Monchi, which didn't stop him sodding off to Roma when they flashed a bit of cash. Barca with a combined age 59 years lower than Celta Vigo shown their naivety when conceding a 3-goal lead against Dad's Army. And here's the real scandal. Ladies and gentlemen, Nolito played 2 La Liga games for Barcelona in the 2010-11 season and was clearly seen celebrating a goal against them. Now, if you're upset or affected by any issues surrounding Nolito's celebration, then we are here for you. Honestly, Barca, learn some street smarts if you're going to compete with the likes of, I don't know, Atletico Madrid. I mean, you'd never see them conceding late goals and crumbling to a 3-all draw. So Real Madrid unconvincingly strengthened their position as Rayo's title bid falters. We'll have a look at all of the scores and find out whether Levante finally won under their coach. Hang on, won't bear with me. Actually, I haven't checked Terry. Is he still there? Pereira still there? Yeah, good.
Yeah.
We've got them down for a three-coach strategy. We'll see how quickly they sack him and move on. Terry's been back in time this weekend. Been to a place called Portsmouth, Terry, haven't you?
Yeah, Pompey.
Yes. Watching a bit of football in the old Fratton Park, which when. The last time I went to Fratton Park, they were in that Premier League period. It was old-fashioned and falling a bit then. Has it been done up since then?
Yes, inside, no. Actually, but it still looks familiar outside.
Yeah.
I remember where the coach used to pull up when we were playing there. That's exactly the same, a gate with Fratton Park on it. But a lot of the stadium has been modernised and tidy little stadium. Tidy, decent-sized stadium. 6,500. They've been getting 14,000 in league games. So the crowd was down for the home game against Harrow Borough in the FA Cup. And it was, it was interesting, tidy game. Harrow Borough put up a really good performance. And we're in it right to the very end. And had a chance, a couple of half chances at the end when they could manage to get the ball in the box and hope for a bit of good fortune. It didn't go their way, but no, it was good. Almost good to get out. And I missed co-commentating. I don't do it as much as I used to. So the invitation to do this was gratefully accepted.
Excellent. Quick COVID update. I'm feeling better. Thank you very much. Thank you to everyone. People who sent nice messages through as well. So thank you for that. I'm feeling better. I've still got an annoying cough. So thankfully there is the mute button so I can suddenly disappear and reappear, which is good, especially because Terry's got the headphones on. You don't want to be hearing that. If you want to be a Patreon, patreon.com/LTEL. We need your support to keep us going, basically, and keep us podcasting. Right then, Spanish football. It's a good weekend, Terry, wasn't it? So obviously the sort of the focus piece of the weekend was the Seville derby. Should we start there, even though the drama was probably elsewhere, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because Sevilla did a good job, didn't they? You know, it wasn't the most thrilling. Betis, maybe, as with every football match, really, it could have turned out differently had they taken some opportunities. But in the end, Sevilla pretty comfortable playing a lot of the game against 10 men, of course, which certainly helped.
Yeah, I thought it was competitive first half. To the extent I thought it was very evenly matched until Guido Rodriguez gets the second yellow card. Then I would have to say I was really, really disappointed with how Betis performed with 10 men. Mm. I was disappointed with the attitude, with the mindset of Pellegrini. It was far too defensive. It invited Sevilla comfortably to dominate possession in the attacking half of the pitch. And within 5 minutes of the second half starting, I could see the tactics were wrong for Betis. I know it's tough going down to 10, and it isn't the end of the world, I promise you. But so many teams end up playing, which is always a source of frustration to me, the tactical system with 10 men, where you just leave one up front and everybody else back behind the ball and you never get out. You spend half a game in this instance camped in your own half until it's too late. And at 1-0, they tried to open up a little bit, but not really that much. They're looking to hang on in there until maybe 10 minutes to go, then force an equaliser, take a chance, but they didn't get to that stage with just under 10 minutes to go. Bellerin gets an own goal to give Sevilla a comfortable win after Acuna opened the score with a fantastic strike. But they I was disappointed. It's not the end of the world. When I say it's not the end of the world, it's a disadvantage. Of course it is. Mm. But you don't have to be as negative as Pellegrini was. And I think it was a big fault. And then it led to the second half, looking at Sevilla dominating, whereas I thought until Guido Rodriguez went off, it was a tough one to call. I probably was leaning towards the draw at halftime until he gets sent off. Then after that, you're looking at it and thinking, well, it'd be interesting to see what attitude Betis come out of in the second half. And it was a negative one. And in my opinion, Pellegrini didn't give his team a chance to win or draw that game at all in the second half.
It needed that goal by Acuna, though, didn't it, from Sevilla's point of view? Because they were wasting chances, weren't they? They're a team that knows how to waste a chance as well, aren't they?
Yes, Rafa Mir was guilty of a couple. I still get frustrated. I know it's an ongoing moan of mine. But when I see crosses going into the box with Sevilla, there's only ever one player in there. Mm. The rest are ringing the penalty area, whether that's on the far beyond the far post or outside the penalty area. I think Rakitic was trying to get forward most out of the midfield players for Sevilla last night. But he's not the Rakitic that used to get in the box and score goals. And if he's ever been that, I mean, he has done it on occasions. He picks his moments when he's been at his peak. But to expect him to be the one driving forward from a midfield of him, Jordan and Fernando is difficult to imagine how they're suddenly going to score goals. So Campos wide, and it just always feels to me there's not enough players in the penalty area for Sevilla. So when that good play results in either they've really got to be accurate with their cross, Lamela and that and occasions drifts inside, maybe more than Ocampos, but it just always seems to me to be a lack of the game last night, red jerseys in and around the penalty area, and it's Rafa Mir or it's Enesri or nothing at all. So that's how they score goals. But their defensive record is really good. They are hard to beat. They've got the best defensive record in the league now. They're hard to beat. They're hard to break down. Industrious in midfield. They do have talent in attacking positions. I still feel they play with the brakes on. The strikers are always under pressure to be really efficient as well because they don't get loads of chances. But I do see them, and I will continue to repeat it, that they are serious title challengers. Yeah. So it's no surprise to see them get the win, but I thought it was two reasons. The sending off of Guido, which was silly, halfway line, avoid that challenge. Hmm. You know, as an experienced player, avoid that challenge. It wasn't the be-all end all to make that challenge. It wasn't all or nothing. There was plenty of work for Sevilla to do from just over the halfway line, avoid that second challenge, and then the negative attitude of Pellegrini in the second half, where his only intention was to set out to hold on to the 0-0.
Explain and that.
He asked for trouble.
Explain that challenge for us then, Terry. So what's he done? Has he just forgotten he's been booked? Is it at the moment?
I guess it's instinct, isn't it? Mm. But in the heat of the moment, you have to be better than that. Yeah. You have to. I mean, he complained about the decision, but it was clear yellow card.
Yeah,
it was a foul on a player that was running away from him. So, it's easy for us to say, don't make that tackle. There's 50,000 supporters in the stadium. You're pumped up, and your instinct is you think he probably thinks he can win the ball.
Yeah,
I don't think for 1 second he's thinking I'm going to give away a foul. I don't think he's intending to foul, but in that split second he has to make that decision. I'm on a yellow. Do I avoid making this challenge, or the instinct is I can win it? And it is hard to put yourself in that position for your brain to work that quickly when your instinct is to you think you can win that tackle. So it's easy to say avoid it. Think you haven't got time. It's bang, it's a loose ball and a player running away, and then oh God, what have I done? He was complaining to the referee. He's probably annoyed with himself, to be perfectly honest, because he can't have had any complaints about the second yellow. So then, as I say, I was disappointed with the attitude of the Pellegrini in terms of just trying to hold on for the draw. You're one man down, but you've got 50,000. There's 200 Sevilla supporters there. They will help you get through that second half if you're having a go. Mm. So that's kind of evens up the advantage, disadvantage. And unfortunately for Betis, Pellegrini chose to just sit back, hang on to 0-0 and hope that they can get through half a game with keeping a clean sheet. That wasn't the case. So Sevilla thoroughly deserved the win in the end.
Let's crack on
great
to the
atmosphere, though.
Yeah. Let's crack on to the three threes. So Celta Vigo, we'll do Celta first, shall we? Celta Vigo 3, Barcelona 3. So very young Barcelona side, except, of course, the fact that Sergio Busquets got a rare goal. But a young, you know, pretty young Barcelona side, isn't it? I wouldn't say that they were dominating for three. It was quite an open game, wasn't it, when they were 3-0 up? So how much naivety goes into that one? What should have happened when they're 3-goal? You should never lose a 3-goal lead, should you? That's, you know, no matter how young your team is.
I'm an optimist. So if it happened to my teams that I was playing for or coaching for, I could always try and make a case for making a comeback when you're 3-0 down at halftime. You would say to your team, let's get the, you know, if we get the next goal, then we've got a chance. The dynamic of the game changes, particularly against a team that are vulnerable at the moment, which Barcelona are. In the first half, they were fantastic. But they were fantastic in terms of being efficient in terms of taking their chances, which hasn't been the case this season. Their away form this year is an absolute disaster. They haven't won this year away from home. They've only got 3 points, which is the only worst teams in La Liga are the bottom two, Levante and Getafe, who have 2 points. So they're vulnerable. And for a whole host of reasons, interim manager, missing players. I'll get on to the injured players in this game. So in my opinion, the game changed. It's somebody a bit of a, I wouldn't say shambolic, that's too much of criticism. They're in disarray in terms of team selection. It changes every game. Players are available, unavailable. Players are coming back from injury, then going back on the injured list. And then during this game, I think 3 players went off injured, maybe 4 had to go off injured in this game. And being vulnerable and then conceding the first goal relatively early in the second half from Aspas. This is how the game changes. They're 3-0 up, they're cruising. If they take away the injuries at the moment because they've made the changes, if Ter Stegen doesn't make that mistake, then it stays 3-0. And then you play another 10 minutes and it's still 3-0. Then the hope of Celta Vigo then dissipates to the extent they probably don't feel then they won't believe they can get back in it. But if you're gifted an opening goal by an error from Ter Stegen, terrible goalkeeping, fantastic goalkeeper, but and that's when the dynamic changes, then suddenly it doesn't look as impossible. And I always, you know, would say to teammates or teams that I was coaching that, you know, they've done it. We can do it. You know, it's half a game of football. It doesn't take long to score a goal, but it's really important. We don't concede and we get the next goal and you just try to reiterate that and instill that belief in your team. So you need some encouragement because, as I said, if Celta had gone 15, 20 minutes without scoring, then your hope disappears. But if you get gifted an opportunity to get back in the game at 3-1, the whole dynamic changes. Barcelona then go on the back foot. The home crowd start getting behind the team when, you know, 10 minutes before that, it was all doom and gloom. And then, you know, the dynamic changes in the fact that one team plays better, the other team starts to play worse, particularly when you've got young players, inexperienced players. And that led to Celta getting a dramatic, I'm checking the time because it's important this week, the 96-minute equaliser. And you get that close. So it was untidy play from Barcelona in the second half. Excellent in the first half. They're hampered by players already missing, hampered by players going off injured. And this is a big issue, I think. When I'm getting sick of it now, not just with Barcelona, and I'm not blaming the players at Barcelona, but I'm sick of seeing loads of players going off injured. So the bigger picture has to be looked at. And there are one or two issues regarding Barcelona, allegedly complaining about the physios. My complaint would be the sports scientists, the training methods. We hear a lot of players getting injured for Barcelona who finish matches and then they're injured in training and they're not fit for the next game. So training has to be looked at. The physical preparation has to be looked at. I know clubs didn't get a lot of preparation in terms of pre-season. I know I would take the argument on board that the big clubs do play a lot of games in a season. Club games, then the added international games. So the players are being pushed to the limit. But I was a coach at Wycombe Wanderers for 6 years. And, you know, We avoided relegation. We stayed with relegation battles when we took over. We got to an FA Cup semi-final. My biggest achievement was having 6 years as coach and not having one single player get injured in training through a muscle injury. And I didn't have a sports scientist. And we did have a season where we had 60-odd games because we had replays. We got to an FA Cup semi-final. We got dragged into relegation battles, so pressure was on at the end of the season after we got knocked out of the cup in the semi-final against Liverpool, and we had 3 games left, and we had to win sufficient points to stay up. And that was 60, and we had some players play all of the games because we couldn't rest players. So my biggest achievement, I look back now, I mean, 6 years without a single player pulling a muscle in training. So I knew what I was doing, and I've come to the conclusion, I actually think I do know better. They can have all these medical journals. You can have all the qualifications you want. If you've never kicked a ball and you've never played in a physical game and you don't know what it feels like to wake up the next day, or the, in my case, the day after as well, then how do you know? You can look at the journals, you can do all the studying, and you know, I think I knew, and football people in general will know more than those medical experts. That we're talking about red zones and this zone and that zone where the players are being pushed in there to avoid. To the extent I knew what I was doing. And you know, we didn't have many muscle injuries during games either because I took the warm up before games. So I think there is a crossover now between genuine experience of players, you know, that turn into coaches. You watch, they're not allowed to do that. They don't do the warm ups. They're standing on the side and chatting away with the manager, the sports scientist that. You know, we'll take the warm up for the games. I genuinely feel that we've lent too much towards sports scientists who don't realise what is needed, how a professional footballer feels, how an ageing professional footballer feels compared to how Busquets feels to Ansu Fati doing the same warm up for a game. It doesn't make any sense. I did have to warm up when I was 21, 22, 23. By the time I was 27, 28, 29, 30, it was important to warm up. And it was my type of warm up. No one warmed me up when I was playing in my career. I would never want anyone to warm me up. I want to, you know, prepare myself for that match. So my warm up as I got older was a slow warm up, half an hour, but starting slow and finishing off sprinting and kicking the ball as hard as I would like. Now we see the players go out, and I was guilty of it when I was coaching at Fulham. I weren't allowed to do it. So we sat back and watched the sports scientists do it, and it was nothing like I did or want to do, but the players adhered to it because it's the only thing they knew. Not every player is the same. I played with players who never warmed up, would go out and just want to shoot at the goalkeeper from 25 yards. You know, and then I played with players and coach players who like myself, needed a half-hour warm-up. Just start slow, because if you start too fast, that can cause a problem. You know, if you're a different body type to someone else. So I feel that the Xavi has got to come in, and that's the big thing he has to look at. They've got quality in terms of players. Yeah, we know all the other issues. They haven't got money. They can't spend a fortune in the transfer market, but they have some really good players there that could really form a good competitive team. Good variation of old and young. But they need them fit. We can't keep seeing Dembele turn up and disappear. We can't see Fati turn up again and disappear through injury. Nico Gonzalez is a young player. He's gone off injured. You know, Gabby's gone off injured. Eric Garcia's gone off injured. There's all these players that, you know, that we keep seeing missing. And it's not only Barcelona. You know, Real Madrid suffered this year. They're back four almost missing for the start of the season. They've only just come back together again. Hazard has had issues. So I think there needs to be a real good look at the training methods of clubs. How you make this better.
So tougher.
Are they training hard enough?
Tougher
question. Is there time to train hard enough?
Yeah. So you say I'll summarise it. Tougher questioning of the sports scientists and the medical staff by the playing coaching staff. As you know, are you sure this is right? Because we're getting an awful lot of injuries. So yeah, basically, so if you're Laporta or Cruyff, or you know, it's whoever senior figures are in the sports management of the club, you're entitled to be saying, aren't you? We're paying a lot of money for these players. Why are we getting as many injuries? Why are we getting as many injuries? No particular reason to, is that, as you say, there are certain things because you don't be too cynical about modern medicine, do you? Because, you know, for example, people used to get hernias all the time. No one gets hernias anymore in football because they do so much core strength and stability work. Yep. So that, you know, that works, but you're right. There just seem to be a preponderance of other kinds of injuries, isn't there? So therefore, it would suggest that there's a little bit of a lack of robust questioning sometimes of the practices, because the danger is that stuff that a scientist can discover in a lab 5 years ago becomes, you know, by the time it gets watered down, unless you're really stress testing it all the way down, you're just following some kind of, oh, well, this is something I learned in college 5 years ago, which is not good enough, is it? You know, you need the experience. You need to reflect on what's actually happening in the field compared to what you've learned in the classroom.
That's training hard enough as well? So not just blame them, maybe Koeman. But does a manager get time to physically prepare the players for a 60, 70 game season? Mm. Probably not, is my answer. I mean, we've gone through interesting times recently where the pre-seasons have been different. But even when there have been no COVID issues, restrictions, they bugger off to all over parts of the world to play games to earn money. That's not physically preparing for a 60, 70 game season. Do the players get enough rest between the seasons? Of course they don't. So there are those issues to look at, which involve everybody. But you know, ideally, you would like to train at really a high level. I'm avoiding the intensity word because I don't. A high level, fast tempo, so that when you come to a game, you're not going that extra yard and pulling up with injuries. I don't feel now the teams, the managers, the coaches get that chance because they're playing one game and 2 or 3 days later, they're going into another game. So ideally, you would recover from the weekend's match on the Sunday, maybe the Monday, then Tuesday, Wednesday, you'd really be going at it. And I'd really be going, working hard, really training hard for 2 periods of 45 minutes. That would make sense. You know, I'm not talking about an hour and a half off, 2 hours off. I'm talking 45 minutes, really intense after you've done. Use the word intense. 45 minutes after a 20-minute warm-up, do a full, 30-40-minute, really good spell, and then perhaps ease it down a little bit, then go again for another 25-30 minutes. So when you come to the weekends games, you're training for 2 hours. A 90-minute game shouldn't be an issue. But clearly at the moment, for a lot of players and a lot of clubs, doing that 90 minutes is making players break because they're not doing it often enough during the week. So it's almost like they're pushing their bodies to the limit in a match, and that's their bodies are not up to it. So I think, I can be critical of our Barcelona. I said the mistake from Ter Stegen then changed the attitude of both sets of players. It was untidy. As I say, numerous substitutions, player changes for Barcelona, and it is what it is for them. I know it's what they keep saying, but I know Xavi's in charge now. He's going to get a little bit of period where the players have all gone missing anyway. When they'll come back, they'll probably come back on the Wednesday and the Thursday before their next game. He's going to have a day or two to prepare them for the next match. So this isn't something Xavi's going to be able to turn around quickly, but I would suggest they need to look in that 2 weeks that he's got before the players return at the reasons why he believes so many players are getting injured. Players are coming back from injury and lasting a game or two and then going off injured again. So I think that's the biggest issue that Xavi needs to resolve at the moment.
Let's do another 3-3 draw, shall we, Terry? I'm getting into them. This notion of the 3-3 draw. Now, Atleti, they're not the kind of flimsy boys that would get blown aside like Barcelona. Etc. But they did. So Luis Suarez scores a really good goal. Savic with an own goal. That was unfortunate, wasn't it? Because it was lashed by Guedes.
And it deflected off Oblak, didn't it?
Yeah, so Oblak saves it, pushes it, doesn't it? And it hits him. Can't do anything about it, can it? Griezmann scored an absolute cracker. Schalke scored a terrible goal. Same outcome. But then where's it go wrong then? Why? How come Hugo Duro, 92 and 96, manages to equalise the game?
Well, it goes back to what we've been saying about Atletico, that the personnel at the back probably isn't as good as it has been in the past. Yeah. So when you look at defensively, the statistics this year tell you that they're not as good defensively. And I was going to blag this, and I'm going to be honest with podcast listeners. I lost my reception with 5 minutes to go, and I got it back when Koke was being interviewed after the game. So I'm looking at 3-1. I got a text from a friend of mine saying, that result is Simeone's fault. And I thought, what? And then I had to look at them and went, Jesus, what happened there? So that's how quick football can turn around. Valencia were totally outplayed. Atletico were really good. Valencia were fortunate, to, as you say, to get the savage goal. I have seen the stuff and the consequences of what happened in the 5 minutes that I lost at the end of the game. It's football. I mean, I talked about the dynamics of the Celta Vigo game. And Hugo Duro comes up with a couple of really good goals as well. And I mean, he was only in the pitch. He came in as a sub late on. I'm looking at his time when he came on as a sub. I made a note of it because he came in the 85th minute and gets two goals. Yep, he gets two goals in 92nd and 96th minute. And the dynamic changes at 3-1. The game I was watching prior to my losing my own reception, Valencia weren't getting back in that game. But just that one goal changes the whole thing. The crowd suddenly, those that were still in the stadium because a lot had left the ground, or those that waited were probably waiting just to boo Valencia. Suddenly, it all turns around completely and Valencia are suddenly heroes. And another comeback. And it's not the first time they've done it this season. They've done it on other occasions. A great spirit from Bordalás's team to stick in there when they shouldn't be. Simeone did make changes, but I don't think there was anything drastic. One or two were a little bit negative. But it's just a sign of... We can analyse the two goals Atletico conceded and think he could do better, he could do better, he should have been tighter. So I think that's the sort of things that Simeone's having to deal with, that they're making defensive mistakes that they haven't done in the past. But in terms of going forward, fantastic again. I actually think the Suarez... I mean, Suarez made Diakabi made Suarez look lightning quick again, didn't they? So, which I was astonished that Suarez, he let it run across his body and was able to beat Diakabi, just committed himself, dived in, made a real mess of defending that first goal. As you said, Griezmann, his goal was, that's killed all the statisticians with their, he won the ball back and he's got an assist and scored a goal for us. He was like, blew the Fantasy Football League up, world up. So that was a run from his own right half, you know, wins the ball back, goes on, looked like he'd lost the angle for a shot. Anything across goal would have been blocked by the defender, but he went for the near post, top corner with power, and brilliant goal. And I actually think the Correa Griezmann behind Suarez is the best solution for Atletico now. It's Griezmann and Correa, they drop in, they swap about. I thought João Felix, when he played against Liverpool, stayed too high up. And it didn't have the same shape. Now, I think in these Suarez up front and the other two playing behind, but able to run in behind them as well and to drop in and make a midfield player, but to play in that little space between midfield and defence, they both do it really well. Correa has turned into a sensational footballer, really intelligent as well. I wasn't sure that was in his locker in terms of playing in that position. Now, he's good at playing wide, playing alongside a striker, but he's adapted really well to playing in that position. So, I think it was all looking so good for Atletico. Just they lost their nerve when it went to 3-2 and then again conceded. And not, so it's a crushing blow for Atletico Madrid. But I would say going forward and in midfield, and they've got injuries as well, particularly in midfield positions, that they're getting that part of the team right, which has been criticised for so long. It's now the basic fundamentals at the back that Atletico needs to get back as quickly as possible.
Yeah, it gets some better defenders in, as we were saying the other day.
Yeah.
So Real Sociedad, then Terry, they still lead the way. We keep having this discussion, don't we? Where are we now? 8th of November. You know, I keep saying. So they're still top. And they go away to Osasuna and they win another game. Mikel Merino scored, had the temerity he didn't celebrate, because that would be terrible thing to do. But Yanazai then, I'm glad Yanazai took that penalty, because his run was sensational that led to the penalty, wasn't it? And he's got to score it himself. And they march on, Real Sociedad, top of the league.
Yeah, and I mean, I kind of get Mikel Merino one. He started at Osasuna, he went off to Dortmund, Newcastle, came back. And in this game, he got a fantastic reception from the supporters, which isn't always the case for a former player returning to play against your club. He didn't run, and it wasn't as dramatic as the Mickey taking we did against Jorge Molina, who scored a dramatic equaliser again in the 96th minute. But he kind of celebrated with his teammates. He didn't push them away and run to the supporters and pray for forgiveness. So I kind of get that. I thought that was respectful, to be honest. But again, it's another big win. Do you know what? I'm looking at the table now. And I will still stand by my thoughts that Real Sociedad won't win the league. And I said that possibly top four. So I'm looking at the table now, and they're 11 points ahead of Barcelona.
Yeah.
Now, if you look at the table, I think Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid, nailed on top four. I think Sevilla nailed on top four. So if Real Sociedad are now 11 points above Barcelona, Real Sociedad have only lost the first game of the season, ironically enough, at Barcelona. So Barcelona have got a lot of, I don't see Real Madrid, Sevilla and Atletico dropping out of the top four. So Barcelona's chased now. I see Barcelona, they can catch Betis and Rayo and Osasuna and Athletic Club, who are the teams above them. But that gap between them and Real Sociedad, it's not going to take some catching up now. Mm-hmm. So while we're looking at Barcelona's demise, and we're still thinking, I still think probably, until now, I probably still thought, well, I see them finishing top four. But the recent run of results has now left them 11 points behind Real Sociedad, who haven't lost the game, as I said, since they've gone, you know, 12 unbeaten. And they don't concede goals. They have sufficient players in their team that can create and that can score goals. That's hell of a gap for Barcelona to close up now to get into that top four and get Champions League football next season. So, I salute Real Sociedad. What they're doing is fantastic. Osasuna away is a tough game. It's a derby and they compete. And as I said, they've just got that quality. And they're another team. They've not moaned about their injuries. They've just got on with it. Lots of players been missing through injury, but somehow they just keep bringing other young players in, and three or four games down the line, they're performing like seasoned first team players. So Imanol has been incredible. It's incredible what they're doing.
Credit to the BBC, because I'm nicking their table at the moment from for the Patreons who are looking on the screen. And you see here, Terry, the form guide at the edge. This isn't it? It's devastating for Barcelona, isn't it?
Yeah. 2 points in the last four games.
Yeah,
2 points.
Reds and greys, as they do it. But when you look at the top of the league, of course, it's all greens and greys for Real Sociedad on a good run. The top four for all, I know they all keep dropping points here and there. There's a huge gap, isn't there, between the form for those teams and Barcelona, who you'd almost say are somehow ninth in the table. They've got a game in hand on Real Sociedad with that 11 point deficit, but they don't have a game in hand on Real Madrid, Sevilla, or Atletico, do they? So, are they sort of? I know you're not a bookmaker. Are they unlikely to make the Champions League? Are they odds against now to make the Champions League, Barcelona?
I think because of that. I think because of the form of Real Sociedad and that gap.
Yeah.
So they would have been the team that Barcelona would have been targeting. They know that. You know, they can get amongst the pack with Real Madrid, Sevilla and Atletico, but they're not going to fall out of the top four. Mm. And they would be hoping that Real Sociedad would be, but they're not faltering. Barcelona are. And now suddenly there's an 11-point gap. It's all well and good saying that they've got a game in hand, but Barcelona are not winning matches at the moment. So it needs a quick turnaround. Of course, Barcelona would have to hope they could beat Real Sociedad away from home to close that gap even more. But, you know, this could take another 2, 3, 4 weeks for Xavi to start to get the ball rolling, by which time the Real Sociedad, if they continue this form, could be outside. And I don't see them, Barcelona, making up the gap on the other three that I think are certainties to finish in the top four. So I think it's a massive issue now that it's probably I've overlooked, probably a lot of people have overlooked, until this weekend's results, where Real Sociedad win again, Barcelona drop points again at Celta Vigo. And suddenly you go, wow, that's an 11-point gap they've got to make up now. Mm. And they're not playing, they don't look at the moment like they're going to be, you know, making that gap up anytime soon. Still lots of football to be played. I mean, 26 games left for Barcelona, you know, 25 for Real Sociedad. But we're not as bad as the Premier League in terms of sacking managers left, right and centre. But I think that it kind of feels a weird season that we feel like it's a long way in, but it's not. Does that make sense? I don't know if you have the same feeling. We're seeing managers sacked in La Liga, lots of managers being called to the managers sacked in the Premier League. and they're only 12 or 13 games in. The season feels longer than it actually has been. But then you look at it and you go, well, Real Madrid and, you know, got 26 games left. Barcelona got 20. It's a lot of football to be played still.
Right. We need to get to Real Madrid, Terry. There'll be Real Madrid fans twiddling their thumbs thinking, well, come on. All this going about everybody else.
Yeah.
They beat.
No fuss.
Yeah, Real. It's a big. Well, it wasn't exactly blow them away, Rayo Vallecano, did they? But you know, it's a good result. Is what it is, isn't it? A 2-1 win of a Rayo Vallecano for Real Madrid.
You see, we could play the midweek podcast again with Real Madrid. Started well, scored goals, get ahead. Didn't really take the game away from Rayo Vallecano, but they got the job done. And that's what, you know, Ancelotti will be hoping. He said his second half performance disappointed him. That they didn't, you know, take it away from Rayo Vallecano and finish the game off, but he's getting points, he's getting wins. They're getting the job done. That can't continue. They're going to have to find better form soon. And we've talked about those two comebacks against Atletico and against Barcelona. Do you know what? This was really close as well by Rayo. But what it does say to me is that. I agree that the top teams that normally dominate this league aren't probably the best versions we've seen. But the rest of the league, it's really, really competitive this season. So I hear people on television saying which that it's the worst La Liga has been in memory. It's not. The big teams may be not at their best, but the rest of the teams in the division are pretty competitive. And Rayo, to have the guts they showed to try and make that comeback. Falcao came on, I've just checked my figures in, on the 69th minute, scored on the 76th and went off injured on the 81st minute. If he stays on for the other 10 minutes, then perhaps he would be, you know, we're talking about a different result. I thought it was a penalty at the end. I have to be honest. I thought there was the foul that by Camavinga. I think anywhere else on the pitch would have been given as a foul. But it wasn't given. I'm not sure it went to VAR. So we were nearly talking about another comeback. So Real Madrid need to play better. But as opposed to Atletico and Barca, they're not dropping points. They're getting the job done. And when they do play better, then, they're obviously, I'm not going to be daft enough to not suggest. I mean, they're clear and obvious going to be involved in the title challenge. And I still think contenders in the Champions League. I really do. I just think they know what they're doing. They've still got the quality of players and fantastic manager. So Real Madrid, we're not talking about it as much because they're not making the slip-ups that the others are making. They're getting the job done. And I think there's better form around the corner. And when there is, then there'll be a force to be reckoned with.
Are you signing anyone for Real Madrid in January, Terry? If you're Ancelotti or whoever does the signings at Real Madrid, no, happy. No. Don't feel a defender short still or anything?
No, I don't. I think obviously if they're you can always plan for loads of players being out injured. Yeah. But if you've got that back four in place, you've still got Marcelo, you've got Nacho. And I think Nacho's can adapt. Lucas Vazquez can play right back. We've seen Fede Valverde play right back as well. So no, I don't think there's a major rush to go out and sign a player. That unless it's down to Ancelotti to choose to discard some players. But I don't see that being the case. Never a great time to sell a player. So unless Ancelotti wants to make a change, I don't feel there's a need drastically. Camavinga's come in as well. I think he's terrific. Played well again at the weekend and looks to be really, he's a really good addition to the Real Madrid squad. So, I think I wouldn't be desperately searching to try and sign someone in the window if I was Real Madrid. But as I say, better form to come. And when they do, there'll be a force to be reckoned with.
Right, but half of the games to go, Terry, and as you say, La Liga's good at the possible.
I've been rabbiting on.
So let's do them rapidly. Villarreal beat Getafe by the Trigueros goal to nil. It was not a very spectacular result, but they needed it, didn't they? Unai Emery,
good goal from Trigueros as well. Akasa played well, so I'm surprised he hasn't been used more this season. I think it's a waste. And Kike Sanchez Flores after the game looked relatively happy. And he was shaking hands with Capu, he knew from Watford, big smile on his face. And I think he's got a point, actually. I mean, I know Villarreal are not flying at the moment, but Getafe showed determination, organisation. They weren't, didn't have loads of possession and they didn't have loads of attempts on goal. but they were competitive in this game. So I think Kiko Sanchez Flores will take the positives from this game, that they only got beat 1-0. And they gave Villarreal a tough game. But, you know, Emery would be absolutely delighted to have got back to winning ways, four without a win, sliding down the table. And it was a good result in the end, ultimately, for Villarreal.
Alaves beat Levante 2-1. That was an important result, wasn't it, with teams at the bottom end. So Levante still haven't won a game, have they, this, you know, towards the end of last season and all the way through this season. Joselu with another couple of goals for Alaves, a really important run of form for him. Are we in danger that the bottom two are getting cut adrift? I mean, literally, yes. Are you worried about it? Yes. They're both on 6 points, and that's a 5-point gap then up to where Elche are on 11.
Yes, it looks that way. But as I say, there's 25 games to go.
Yeah,
for those teams. So, yeah, hold your nerve.
Yeah.
Try and turn things around and do what Alaves have done. A month, 6 weeks ago, I was criticising Alaves. Now they are 14th from the table, got 13 points and an excellent run of form, mainly down to Joselu, who's been a real surprise package, I have to say. He looks a really, really good striker.
Yeah.
And he has done since he come back to La Liga, you know, criticised for his performances at other clubs, but a solid centre-forward. You know, good goal scorer, good hold-up play, works hard, playing up front on his own now as well. Lucas Perez is forced to play slightly wider, and it's a 4-3-3, but and Joselu is doing really well for Alaves. The key player, they're on a good run of form. Calleja's turned it round. 5 minutes ago, we were saying that Alaves were being cut off. Good run of form. And so Getafe and Levante have to do it quickly, of course, but it's not done and dusted. Nowhere near it yet at the bottom.
He's a funny old player, Joselu, isn't he? I just checked him out. He's 31 now, and he never hit double figures in a season since he was in the Real Madrid B team as a kid until last season. He's been everywhere. He's played in Germany, he's played in Italy, he's played different clubs in Spain and all of that. An element sometimes is that a player, I don't know, just needs to find a bit of consistency and a place, some stability in his career. Yeah.
They drift around. Mm. You know, different paths are taken by players, the loans and stuff like that. And I'm grateful I never went out on loan. Mm. When I was a young player, starting off, going from club to club to club and playing for different coaches and different systems and stuff like that. So I always find it must be a struggle sometimes for some players to go on loan and drift around from club to club, country to country as well.
Yeah.
So, no, from what I've seen of Joselu from, you know, his time back in La Liga, fantastic.
Mallorca got a late equaliser, Terry. Hooray, hooray. Although, except if you're an Elche fan, in which case I'm sorry, Elche fans. And talking about, you know, much-travelled players, Lucas Boye, who I remember seeing playing for Reading. He's all right, actually. Not bad. And then in that weird kind of way, so many players who go to English clubs, you sort of think, "What? I don't know what he did wrong." But he was gone. And then now, again, well into his 20s, isn't he, Lucas Boye? He's now looking sensational for Elche.
Yep, I've spoken to people about him and they actually said he looks a lot stronger now than when he played in England. So whether he's developed physically at that age, you know, clearly he has. To the extent, once again, I'm looking at a former Reading player and now looking at him and thinking, he really, really, really good striker.
Mm.
He scores goals, he's aggressive, he's quick, he runs the channels, he holds it. That's all the things you want from a striker. Good in the air. Two cracking goals at the weekend. He's playing with confidence now. For Mallorca, the late goal is, they were due one, weren't they? They've conceded so many late goals this season, which cost them so many points. So it was kind of cool that they did, you know, a good bit of karma going in their direction. A solid header from Pablo Mafio as well, because when you see it, you're thinking it's got to be one of the big centre-backs. And it's not, it's the, you know, the right back that's an attacking right back. He climbed high above the goalkeeper, made a real mess of Badia dealing with it, coming for the corner, panics in the 96th minute, gets an opportunity to play and not totally to blame for the goal, but it was an untidy way to concede. But a great header from Pablo Mafio. Salva Sevilla still amongst the goals with a penalty, but
at the age of 72. Yeah.
Yep.
actually, how old is Salva Sevilla? Yeah. I'm going to look him
37,
up.
37, I'm thinking.
To be fair, he looked 37 the first ever time I saw him, didn't he, Salva Sevilla? Yep. So, There are some he good didn't. Oldies around, aren't there? Yeah, he's 37. Yeah. Acknowledged. Yes.
He did it. He didn't change the. He didn't go all Grecian 2000 on us.
He didn't. 27. Did he? Yeah. No. Yes. Yeah. So. And, so he's still around now. No one has any idea how old he is other than you.
So no, it was a good game actually. Good to watch.
Yeah, good weekend. 30 goals in La Liga. No, I'm not moaning this weekend, but a lack of goals. Espanyol 2, Granada 0. Granada might point out there should have been more goals. No, old Diego Lopez, though, had a talking of oldies but goodies, had a terrific weekend, didn't he?
Yeah, Andrea Pedrosa. What a great goal that was. Corner, delivered deep outside the penalty box and a volley from Pedrosa. Yeah. Raul de Thomas with a fine header as well. So, Granada are okay. But Espanyol surprised me, I have to be honest. The opening weeks of the season, they didn't have a shot on goal. They never looked like scoring. And suddenly you look at them now and they're flying. They're in the healthy position in the league. Good run of form, 17 points, 11th position. Raul de Thomas in fine form, which has earned him a call up to the national squad to replace some of those injured players that have dropped out.
Yes, international round of games coming up. So we'll be doing something different in the next couple of weeks. No ordinary... I don't know, we'll see, actually. We might do something. We'll definitely do something. We'll decide what. So we leave one more game, which is Athletic losing at home to Cadiz. Sort of got this one in them, Athletic. I think your verdict before has been not knowing where the goals are coming from. And so, you know...
11 in 12.
Yeah.
11 goals in 12 games. Fantastic defensive record. Second best in the league, I think. But they do need, and it's all well and good banging on about they haven't got a recognised striker. They've still got quality up front.
Yeah.
They need to rely on the players they've got. Stop moaning about the ones they haven't, and hope for better from Iñaki Williams, Raul Garcia, Santa is playing there. Villa Libre wasn't involved at the weekend, so they've just got to adapt. But Cadiz won there last year. Do you remember? They went down to 9 men and got the win. Sometimes you just have a lucky ground. Sometimes in Athletic's case, you have a bogey team. And I think that's leaning this way with Cadiz, Salvi Sanchez with a decent goal where maybe Unai Simón could have done better, beating his near post. But Athletic don't create loads of chances. So it's easy for us to bang on about they don't have a goal scorer. They don't create an abundance. You're not looking at Iñaki Williams every week now saying, oh, he's missed 3 this week. He's missed 2. Raul Garcia's missed 2 sitters. It's good football, but they don't create, anywhere near the amount of chances that their supporters would be hoping for.
Yeah, yeah. So we've got international round of games coming up. One big one's for Spain, isn't it? Because they've got to take on Greece and Sweden, haven't they? So it's Greece first, isn't it, in Athens on the 11th. And then they play in Seville against Sweden on the 14th, which is a huge game for Sweden, at top of the group, aren't they? Because
need to win both.
Yeah, yeah. Spain have basically messed up the group, particularly against Sweden before, and they struggled against Sweden, haven't they? It's as you were saying there about Cadiz against Athletic. Sometimes there is a team that you find it very hard to play against, and Spain would seem to be Sweden, who they keep getting drawn against.
Yep, no, it's massively important. Otherwise, they find themselves in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Which you're going to be saw in the last round of playoffs for the last World Cup. Italy went out.
Yeah.
So finishing top is massively important for Spain. Yeah. And it's going to be tough. Yeah. Away from home against Greece isn't easy. They'll be hoping Sweden drop points elsewhere. But Sweden in the last game is almost like a playoff final. The benefit is they're at home. Is it in the Olympic Stadium?
Yeah. Yeah,
dreadful place for Spain to have a game. Really, yeah,
but they've got to somehow they think not, don't they? Somehow they put big games there because in the city of Seville they've done well there before. But
The Sanchez Pizjuan or the Betis Stadium, in the Via Marine. Don't have it in a running track Olympic Stadium.
Yeah,
with the pitches and poor pitch exactly, and the running track around it. So you need it in a traditional football stadium. By you, supporters.
Because Sweden will be thinking that's where the Euros game was played, wasn't it? Sweden will be thinking, we've been there and done well recently. Yeah, nothing to worry about. Yeah,
not an intimidating place to play when there's even with supporters in it. I mean, we've had a number of games there without supporters, but it you need an atmospheric stadium. They'll be well supported, but they've missed a trick there by having it in that particular stadium.
Yeah, right. Okay, cool. Let's meet up and do something again soon. Thank you to everybody for your continued support, for listening to us, and for the Patreons for sending us some money as well. Patreon.com.
I'm going out to go out for a slow warm up.
Ready for next week?
Yeah.
Yeah. Gets to a point.
I'll start now.
I remember finishing playing football, Terry, and you go literally straight there, straight to the pub, and then get up the next morning, you'd be absolutely fine. If I played football now, I think I'd need about a week's notice before I could go do anything.
two or three days off before, two or three days off after, yeah. And play the game in the middle.
Yeah.
I know exactly how you feel. I used to be like that when I was playing. Don't worry about that.
Right. Great to see you. Thanks for your support, everybody, and we'll see you soon.